DW Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Josie Mahachi.
And I am Abubakar Jallo. As usual, we broadcast live on our Facebook page and the address is DW Africa.
Coming up, a new report suggests that fightings between separatist forces and the government of Cameroon is escalating.
Our soldiers who were killed were initially kidnapped by Chacha, and Chacha went on to kill them. So it is a war crime and it is strictly a crime against humanity.
And also coming up, Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza is to receive heavy lump sum of money as a severance package for him to not run for a fourth term.
It's really a lot of money when Bini and Burundi franks for a former president who had always advantages, because a former president is not really a person who's poor, who's hungry.
These stories plus more coming right up. But first, here is the world's news in brief.
DW News.
And my name is Jen Nyingi. The World Health Organization is holding a crucial meeting to discuss the outbreak of a respiratory virus in China. It will be decided whether to declare coronavirus a public health emergency, which will require a coordinated international effort to contain the spread of the disease. So far, 9 people have been confirmed dead and over 400 cases reported. There are fears that the disease could spread, and several countries are screening transit points for all passengers. Health authorities have traced the virus to a seafood market in Wuhan, and the region mayor Zhu Chaiwang says they are working hard to bring the situation under control.
After our medical experts made some breakthroughs through gene sequencing, it should be said that we can now detect the disease faster. The fast detection has allowed us to treat many patients in a more timely manner. So there has been a sharp increase in the number of confirmed cases over the past 2 days. It's mainly through gene sequencing. After optimizing the reagent kit diagnostic method, the confirming process has been shortened, not that the cases have gone up.
Day 2 of this year's World Economic Forum is underway in Davos, Switzerland. Political and business leaders from around the world are gathered for the four-day meeting. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has delivered a special address laying out the EU's environmental priorities while also touching on concerns over falling economic growth in the bloc.
The World Economic Forum's so-called Global Risk Report identifies that the top 5 risks for our economy are all climate-related. There is still scope to address these risks, but the window of opportunity is rapidly closing. We have to act now. Over the next decade, the European budget will mobilize 1 trillion euro of investment, and this will create a green investment wave, and there is a demand for it.
Donald Trump will return to Washington with his impeachment trial in full swing in the U.S. Senate. Later today, Democrats on the prosecution team are expected to begin oral arguments laying out their case against the U.S. president. Trump is charged with abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, stemming out from his dealings with Ukraine. This news is coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. 2 days of mourning have begun in Burkina Faso after known terrorists killed at least 36 people. The gunmen attacked 2 villages in the country's north near the border with Mali. The attackers also set fire to a primary school and a local market. And finally, the only functioning airport in Libya's capital, Tripoli, has reopened after coming under attack earlier today. It was not immediately clear who launched the attack, but suspicion fell on General Khalifa Haftar forces, which have been laying siege to the capital for months in a bid to wrest authority from the UN-backed government. For more news and information, head on to our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jen Nyingi.
In case you're just joining us, this is Africa Link. We are live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Josie Mahachi.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. We broadcast via our partner stations across several African countries and also streaming live on Facebook. Our address is DW Africa. Some of you are already there on Facebook and you're sending shout-outs from the different places you are listening to Desnick. You are there every day. Thank you. Ekondo Thompson, Akumbe, Akindo. We thank you all and much more of you guys. We can't get to all of your names.
Indeed, Abu. Now on our top story in Africa, Cameroon separatist groups in the English-speaking regions are increasingly turning against each other, with six fighters dead and 35 allegedly kidnapped in recent days. Separatist leaders accuse the Cameroon military of causing the trouble through infiltration.
Now, the military denies the allegations and warns that it will, quote-unquote, neutralize all armed groups that refuse to turn in their weapons. The escalation means more suffering for the population. Moki Kinseka reports from Yaoundé on the escalation of a deadly conflict.
Natacha, what's in it?
One law.
What's in it?
One law.
No nothing condemning
the Republic.
Natacha, no nothing condemning
the Republic.
This is the voice of a man who calls himself General Chacha, a separatist fighter in the English-speaking Bui administrative area in the northwest region of Cameroon. He claims that his 1,000 Cameroon Restoration Forces will go on fighting for self-determination.
We cannot betray this fight. If any of you tries to betray it, I, Chacha, will look for you until I find you. The Republic has tried to get me and I'm still here, I'm fighting.
The audio was made public last Sunday, a day after individuals claiming to be supporters of Chacha shared videos of close to 40 people they said were fighters from other groups they arrested for betraying the fight. Six of them were later found dead. Tapang Ivotanku, the U.S.-based spokesperson of the Anglophone Defense Forces, ADF, says the abducted and killed fighters are members of his group.
Our soldiers who were killed were initially kidnapped by Chacha, and Chacha went on to kill them. So it is a war crime, and it is strictly a crime against humanity and a violation of the Geneva Convention.
Tanku accused Cameroon's military of infiltrating camps fighting for the independence. Brigadier General Valenka, commander of Cameroon Army, engaged in the fight against the separatists, says,
I want to issue a strong warning to the fake generals. We already know their hideouts, and if they don't lay down their weapons, you are going to strike.
The repeated clashes between separatist groups have raised doubts among many English speakers on whether separatists are still fighting for a separate English-speaking state or their own personal interests. Claudette Manga, an IDP from Bui in northwestern Cameroon, says,
those are people who are claiming that they are protecting us. How come they are killing themselves? It means it is an end to it. They are no longer protecting us.
Communities have since last December attacked at least 10 camps belonging to separatist fighters whom they accuse of looting and killing innocent people. The angry civilians say they do not know who to trust anymore because the military commits similar crimes against them.
Moki Kinseka there with that report from Yaoundé. Earlier on, we posted this on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we got a lot of comments. We had Lionel Betek says, they are all war criminals. No difference between the so-called separatist leaders and the genocidal dictator they claim to fight against, Abu.
And Shimo Mori says, well, fighting is not a solution. Go to the round table and talk your differences. What do you gain when you kill those poor souls?
It's very sad when we keep getting such stories from Africa.
Indeed, it's definitely a valid point he makes there.
Yes. And we go on to our top story of the world today. The coronavirus outbreak, which began in Wuhan, China, and causes a pneumonia-like illness, is raging across Asia, infecting over 400 people and killing 17. The rapid nature of its origin and speed in transmission has been compared with the 2014 Ebola outbreak in Liberia Guinea, and Sierra Leone, which infected over 28,000 and killed about 11,000.
Now, the World Health Organization is currently meeting in Geneva, Switzerland, to determine whether to declare this outbreak a global health emergency. What could Africa deal with if the virus ever reaches the continent? This is a question I put to Dr. Ifeanyi Nsofo, who is a Nigerian doctor specialized in tropical medicine.
I think, first of all, if we look at the available evidence and the level of preparedness by different African countries, it's safe to say that we're not really very prepared to handle those outbreaks, because if you look around already, there are different outbreaks that are happening within the African continent, so although it doesn't get as much attention as the coronavirus is getting.
You recently, a few days ago, released an article, what the world needs to do in order to prevent this. And given the fact that the borders of African countries are very porous, how do you think African countries individually need to do to prevent this virus from reaching their people?
I think that, first of all, every African country must really step up, you know, detection at the air borders. I know in Abuja, where I reside, at the Abuja International Airport, there's the computerized thermal camera that all travelers that come into the country, you know, through the airport will pass through, and what temperatures are high. You know, they are called aside at the port of entry, and the port health authority are properly advised. Most importantly, apart from having this ability to detect at the borders, we should also inform the public, especially people who live along those land borders, what the signs of this infection is, who to call if they feel that somebody presenting with symptoms that mimic particular virus.
Do you really think that Africans would adhere to medical advice, to medical precaution, given the fact that the outbreak of Ebola in West Africa spread because people really did not believe that this was an actual virus, it was an actual disease?
Yeah, I think so, because if you look at since the end of the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, this is almost 5 years now, I think there have been lessons learned from inaction by government, inaction by people. The way false news spread, and, you know, in Nigeria, for example, we started bathing with salt water. I think there have been lessons learned. But however, you know, we cannot relent.
That was Dr. Ifeanyi Nsofo, who is the CEO of the African Health Consultancy Group, EPI Africa, speaking to me about the outbreak of the coronavirus.
Right, still in Africa, we go to Burundi, where the lower chamber of the Burundian parliament last evening passed the bill on the status of a president after leaving office. The new law will allow a former head of state to get 1 billion Burundi francs, equivalent to more than $500,000, and a palace that will be constructed from public funds in a locality of his choice.
Now, on top of that, the former president will receive, on a monthly basis, the salary of a vice president of Burundi with related allowances. This is seen by the opposition and some citizens as a way of impoverishing the already poor country. From Bujumbura, Apollinaire Nirora filed this report.
Defending the bill in the National Assembly, Justice Minister Emero Rantine Kanyana said a president who led the country well should be duly honored.
It's nice to see a head of state ending his tenure well. We should always be thankful and praise the institution of the presidency.
The opposition believes the amount earmarked for the president's retirement is too high. Opposition member of parliament Noem Bonigawa said the state of the country's economy should be taken into account.
The bill has no provision that makes the amount dependent on the economic situation, as I believe it should.
Citizens we talked to in the streets of the commercial capital Bujumbura also believe that the benefits for former presidents are too high, since Burundi is too poor to afford such luxury.
It's really a lot of money when Bini and Burundi francs. For a former president, we had always advantages, because a former president is not really a person who's poor, who's hungry. So I think probably there is something hidden in this story, in this bill.
It's a good move, it's a good decision, and it's a good thing for the former presidents to be having those kind of packages and whatever. But for the context in Burundi currently, economic-wise, I don't think if it's the right timing.
President Pierre Nkurunziza is expected to leave office in August this year after ruling for 15 years. A new president will be elected in general elections on May the 20th.
Apollinaire Nyirora with that report from Bujumbura, Burundi.
And in case you just joining us, this is DW's Africa Link program. We are coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany, with the biggest stories across the African continent. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I am Josie Mahachi. You can always be part of the debate by joining us on Facebook, DW Africa.
And speaking of Facebook, there are a lot of you are commenting. Madison Camus says, well, hi to all of you there. I think the people of Burundi are joking. They can't be serious. Thank you for that comment. Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes, the impact of war and climate change on people living around the Lake Chad Basin.
Lake Chad, yes, I'm a babu.
There are no more fish in Lake Chad. We cannot go to the areas where there is fish because Boko Haram is occupying those places. If we go there, we will likely lose our lives.
That story to come a little later. For now, the Borno State chapter of Network Civil Society Organizations has condemned attacks and killings along the Maiduguri-Damaturu Road in Borno and Yobe states, calling on the Buhari-led administration, the army and the security agencies to secure major roads in the two states.
Now, securing of roads will ensure the restoration of economic activities in Borno, Adamawa and Yobe states. Analysts called on the federal government to repel terrorist attacks by chasing them out from their hideouts. DW's Nigeria correspondent Mohammed Alamin filed this report from Maiduguri.
Out of several roads linking Maiduguri to other parts of the country, only the Maiduguri-Damaturu is safe and accessible. However, the 132-kilometer Maiduguri-Damaturu road has now become a death trap due to recent wanton attacks on lives and properties, including humanitarian workers in affected states. The suspected terrorists always mount roadblocks to kidnap, rob, and kill motorists and travelers. Many have abandoned the road due to fear of Boko Haram terrorists. Some travelers I talked to express fears using the road without escort by the military or other security agencies. Usman Abubakar, an indigene of Kaduna State, is working in Maiduguri.
There are valid fears, very valid fears, because of the incessant nature of the attacks conducted by the insurgents. They unleash terror when, where, and how they want to do it. The insurgents seem fearless, intrepid about the threats of the military and the police to combat their operations along the road.
The Borno State chapter of Network for Civil Society Organization has indicted President Muhammadu Buhari and service chiefs over insecurity in Northeast. Ambassador Ahmad Shehu, Executive Director, Chairman of the Network Civil Society Organization in Northeastern Nigeria, has this message for President Muhammadu Buhari.
We are demanding for the security of life and property of the citizens. You promised us security. We voted you for security and we are demanding for security. Mr. President, in case you are not properly informed, it may interest you to know that of all the seven major highways that connect the state in the region, only one is safe. And of recent, the safest one, that is Damaturu Maiduguri, has now become a death trap.
But the Nigerian military urged the public not to panic, as necessary arrangement has been made to safeguard the lives and properties of citizens in the area. Major General Olusegun Adeniyi is the theater commander of Operation Lapia Dole. In his view, the insurgents are trying to create fear among the road users.
Boko Haram tried to do a lot of things and they have been heavily defeated. So now, what can they do to remain relevant, to attract international attention or national attention, to tell people they are still there? So this return to soft target with a view to striking fear to the populace, I want to assure every Nigerians not to fear Boko Haram.
Boko Haram insurgents has displaced over 1.8 million people, with 300,000 displaced persons seeking refuge in Chad, Cameroon and Niger.
Mohammed Alamin with that report from northeastern Nigeria.
On the spot.
On the spot, and this time a very positive report. Now, Uganda could soon fly its locally built aircraft. Innocent Mugabe, a computer science graduate, is the brainchild of this innovation.
He has designed a single-engine ultra-light small aircraft that is now in its final stages before the skies. DW's Uganda correspondent Frank Higa tells us more about this great African innovative story.
A 27-year-old studied computer science. His passion for aeronautic science motivated him into this venture to start working on his newly designed and manufactured airplane in his home backyard in 2015. I visited Innocent and his two brothers at their home in Kamocha, a suburb in Kampala City, and found them fixing the small aircraft engine, Skyboy. Innocent is determined to see it fly safely despite many challenges, like importing materials for its construction.
We started with drawings, how will it will appear, the different characteristics with it, and different materials for the whole construction of the aircraft. We are doing the final checkup, and we are doing the engine tests to be in a safe version to fly it very well. We don't have any industry building those small aircrafts as such, so we wanted to start up with something small. In the future, we see ourselves building a big industry, building aircrafts around Africa.
With the brothers is engineer Moses Haumba. He's in charge of maintenance and tells me Skyboy has been built using many different materials such as carbon fiber, fiberglass, wood, aluminium, and steel.
It's a two-piston engine. As you can see, the engine is an electrostatic engine. That means you can start it inside without rolling the propeller. Right now, it can't move because we're still working on the electro-injection tank, and we haven't yet connected the rudder and the flaps. And after that, we shall be good to go.
Enterprise Uganda's Charles Ochichi says leading young and vibrant minds into innovation is the best way of harnessing their ambition and passion.
What we need to tell a person like Innocent is that many times things of this kind of nature take time to perfect. They take time to become a solution that the society will pay for. So it needs to be ready for a long waiting. Be ready to be doubted. The moment he begins to go to more successful achievement, regulatory authorities will come in.
Uganda's Minister of Science, Technology and Innovation Undersecretary Freddy Mugunga says the government supports such projects and initiatives like Innocence and provides funding to innovators.
There is other support which we have to give to all innovators, including young people. We've got a department, Innovation and Intellectual Property Management, is supposed to help these people look through their innovations if they can be patented. Their government will have to come in and support.
Frank Yinga, with that very encouraging report out of Africa in Uganda, Abu.
That report brought some chill in there because, you know, as a young boy growing up in Africa, I really looked forward to such innovation. Unfortunately, we didn't have this opportunity.
I know. I get so excited when I hear such good news coming out of Africa. Yeah.
Now, let's get some of your responses there.
Yes, we have Shimo Morris. He says this is the kind of innovation we must encourage in our young folks. These unemployment issues among youths can be a thing of the past if each of the youths was creative and innovative.
And Emandi Yatoro, you wrote to us saying, DW Africa, under Museveni, Uganda is slowly becoming Hollywood. Nothing is real. Well, he has some skepticism there.
Yes, and Martin Amidu Jr. says, very nice, hoping his country will help him.
Thanks for all of your responses there.
Living Planet Africa.
Still in Africa, on our Living Planet segment, active war zones don't just leave scars on the people involved in them or civilians in their path. Conflict also affects the land people depend on for their livelihoods, as well as the wildlife that inhabits it.
Now, what impact does war have on the environment? How do environmental problems increase the likelihood of conflicts flaring up? And how is wildlife affected by human combat? Now, Sam Olukoya report from Maiduguri, northeastern Nigeria, with this report that's affecting the Lake Chad Basin.
Using a small bowl, Mohammed Inua scoops water out of his leaking fishing boat.
is out fishing on the Ngadaalu River in Maiduguri, northeast Nigeria. Inua used to make a living fishing on Lake Chad, but relocated to the Ngadaalu River a few years ago. He came here because Lake Chad is shrinking and because of the Boko Haram insurgency.
Lake Chad is a babu.
There are no more fish in Lake Chad. We cannot go to the areas where there is fish because Boko Haram is occupying those places. If we go there, we will likely lose our lives. You see, that is what is preventing us from going to these areas. So going fishing is a problem.
Fishing on Lake Chad has been on the decline as the surface area of the lake has shrunk from the 25,000 square kilometers it measured in 1960. Experts estimate that what is left of the lake is between a quarter and half of what it was 60 years ago. Professor Edem Achibong Enyang of the Department of Forestry and Natural Environmental Management of the University of Uyo says Lake Chad shrunk due to several human and environmental factors. He said a key environmental factor is the changing weather patterns that have caused droughts in northeast Nigeria.
We have the Lake Chad shrinking by the day. There are other water areas, other wetland areas like Hadejia and Guru wetlands. It has a relationship with the lake itself. So when this one dries up, the other small lakes that feed it, the small rivers that feed this system, they also reduce in their capacity to serve the water cycling process in the earth.
Children now play football in the Ngadaalu River. Drought over the years has reduced parts of the river to a playground for children. Bodies of water drying up as a result of drought is not a unique story in northeast Nigeria, but it is a major blow in a region where more than 10 million people depend either directly or indirectly on the fishing industry. Environmental factors have been further compounded by security challenges. This camp in Maiduguri is one of several such camps for people displaced by Boko Haram. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees says the insurgency has displaced nearly 2.4 million people in the Lake Chad Basin. Many displaced people look for a way to get back to their jobs and providing for their families, though. The influx of fishermen from areas like Lake Chad to places like Ngadaalu River is causing friction between the displaced fishermen and the local fishermen. This situation in Lake Chad demonstrates how conflict only exacerbates the difficulties of living in a changing climate and how these pressures can lead to crisis over water and fishing rights.
Sam Olukoya with that report from Maiduguri on the outskirts there of the Lake Chad Basin. Now, we have some of your comments on the top story, which is about a new report in Cameroon that says the conflict there is flaring up, is exacerbating. Some of you are live on our page writing there. Josephine.
Yes, I see Kenzo, Marcelo Kenzo. He says, when it comes to the situation in southern Cameroon, we continue to follow up on that. That's just what he said.
And Kaylee Vitas wrote, the world has abandoned Southern Cameroon. The genocide going on there is unbearable. Well, the world hasn't described it as a genocide.
Yeah, we have comments from you. I also see here Ngwabe Jone. He says a well-structured army keeps saying that they will deal with the separatists. So we keep hoping for that.
Yeah, we hope for peace in Cameroon, definitely. Now, Bate Ari Paul says, it's time for Germany to support a referendum for South of Cameroon and Basonia to assert its rights to self-determination.
That's true. But before we go, I just want us, Abu, to talk about the good story out of Africa.
Indeed. We can't just talk about all the conflict, yeah?
Exactly. You know, I want us to talk about Uganda. This is quite...
That is an amazing, amazing story. I mean, if you even see the video, it's so really cool to see like young kids think of nothing to build but an airplane.
Exactly. Wow. I'm so excited, and I really want us to follow up on that story when it has taken, when it's ready to take off.
We've actually kept our correspondent Frank Iga there to monitor that story, and you know, maybe get us some video. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we get that on our Facebook page.
Indeed. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of Africa Link. As usual, please keep it Africa Link. I am Josie Mahachi signing out.
And I am Abubakar Jallo. Until next time, ta-ta.
DW. Made for Minds.